Warning, what you are about to watch contains spoilers. If you haven't seen this movie and don't want to know anything about it yet, we are about to ruin that for you. You can still watch. Just turn the volume down. It'll be fun. Like, comment, and subscribe.
Welcome to Rage You Nerds! We are talking Ghostbusters Afterlife, and this is completely uncut, uncensored, unadulterated. It will be edited, so I'm not going to say unedited. And we're talking spoilers! We're going to be spoiling and dishing and commenting and giving our thoughts on Ghostbusters Afterlife, the good, the bad, that muncher son of a gun. So again... If you haven't heard me originally, spoiler alerts are ahead, and we gave you a warning already. So this is like three warnings. You've had enough. You're about to be out. But before you're out, please make sure you like, comment, subscribe,
smash
share,
the
smash the dinghy, and tell your grandma to tune in because we are loved by grandmas. All right, boys, so this is your thoughts on Ghostbusters Afterlife. Let's start with TJ this time.
I loved so much about this movie, from the fact that they used the original score throughout pretty much the entire movie. Every little Easter egg, the book stacking, the machine from part one that gets hauled out of the office at the first of the movie when they're kicked out of the office. So many little things that you just notice in this movie. It just hits you with like this nostalgia. I loved it. I did think it took a little bit of time to get going, and that's understandable given the fact that you have a new set of characters and you're trying to give them a little bit of backstory and development. Yeah, you're trying to give them some character development. So I understand how it feels like it takes a little bit of time to get this movie going, but when it does get going, it's kind of like it's over quick. Did either of y'all kind of get that sense? Like, oh, all right, we're finally here. Then suddenly it's like, oh, okay.
So I kind of did feel that way, but I could understand how other people, maybe not with the full investment to the older Ghostbusters, would be feeling like, well, dang, you guys had an interesting movie, and then you had to shoehorn in these old farts, which I think is literally some of the reviews by The Guardian, The Daily Beast,
losers who think they know everything.
The online
we're wrong with everything.
Don't nobody cares about, so they have to be provocative instead of.
But no, I, it did.
The people
did,
who literally do this.
Back to your thought, TJ. For a two-hour movie, it did feel like that third act was growing, and then wham, bam, 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 we're done. And it's like, okay. Yeah.
And there's some...
They stargated it.
Yeah, there's some problems that I have with the ending and with the third act. I do love how, spoiler alert.
We don't have to provide those anymore. You had your chance.
You've been warned.
Oh, I'm so used to saying spoiler alert. bringing back the original surviving three Ghostbusters and just their quips back and forth, all the stuff, that's said, it's kind of like they never missed a beat, and it just made me smile. I did kind of get glassy eyed for a little bit there at the end with Egon's ghosts helping his granddaughter and all four of them lined up and then just kind of looking over at him. And then, gosh, when Ray said he was sorry, holy shit, I just started tearing up.
Listen, I got teary-eyed when the Ghostbusters made their first appearance, and I even knew the exact point because you could feel, it was like, okay, they're about to show up.
Yeah.
And I still was like, oh, God, they came.
It's like you don't believe it no matter what. All the trailers, everything that's been building up to this, and you don't believe it until you're finally sitting in that theater and you see it on screen.
I will say this,
one of the things that I absolutely loved about this movie, and this is going to be the last thing that I say, is I loved the fact that they did not say Egon Spengler until about halfway through the movie.
Mm.
they really kept as much of the original, with aside from a lot of Easter eggs, but they were really developing these characters up by themselves that I don't think they even, yeah, I don't remember them saying Egon Spengler for like the first half of the movie. And then when it finally does, then it's kind of like, all right, cool.
Yeah. So, I mean, even when they're starting to piece together, who the grandfather is, and you see, when Phoebe goes down there and you see Spengler on the patch, like it still takes until Phoebe herself is like, Egon Spengler is my grandfather or whatever. And it's like, oh yeah, well duh. yeah. Jared, thoughts?
Well, I was going to say something when TJ was talking, but I forgot completely what it was. But I normally have a lot to say, so I think I can make up for it. So the opening to this movie is one of the greatest openings in any movie I've ever seen because it doesn't reveal him, but you know it's him. And there's hints throughout that. Mm-hmm. Like, those of us who are seasoned vets at this know it's Egon. For a person watching this movie with just a little bit of knowledge of Ghostbusters, for example, the screaming kid behind us who wasn't paying attention, they may not get that. And when there's the reveal, it's kind of like, oh my gosh. For us, it's like from moment one, we're like, that's Egon. And so one thing I do have a question about, and feel free to respond, the opening scene with Egon, he's getting ready with the trap in the field because it, obviously the disturbances, nobody knows he's got this elaborate thing, you know, but... it had to have been a terror dog. They got him in the chair, right? Had to have been.
So here's
see the hands coming out of the chair?
I saw the hands coming out of the chair, but the misty thing outside looked more like a werewolf or something.
So here's...
But that is the same mist that also went down and got Mama.
Yes. Callie. So here's what happened. He had Vince. He had Vince Clortho, the Keymaster, in the trap. Because he knew that Gozer couldn't fully manifest without having both the Keymaster and the Gatekeeper present. So he had that trap, and that he was essentially doing what they do in the third act, trying to lure Gozer to that dirt farm and trap her, because she's not just one soul. She's an embodiment of all these right. sacrifices, okay. Which is such an awesome detail to include in the whole moment. Because I've always thought, because of the real Ghostbusters, you can't trap something above like a class 7 because the traps can't handle it. So I thought that was super neat. But yes, so he had Vince Clortho, which we know because that's the one that got released and came back for, oh, what's his face? And then it seemed like the smoky one, because they didn't include a Terror Dog Sentinel in this, and they didn't even show one, so I don't know if that was a misdirect or just a toy-specific thing. But then the smoky one seems to be Zool, and that was, I guess, made even more evident because that is the version that came after Callie, the mother, as you mentioned.
Okay, so, all right. And that's what I thought, and just looking back on it now, that it makes sense. But I was like, wait a minute, what the hell just happened?
To go back to TJ's point, what about him dying in a huge homage Easter egg to Dana Barrett's abduction in the first movie? The terror dog arms popping out of the chair and grasping him.
And I liked how it didn't, it just stopped right there.
Yeah, didn't show anything violent or anything.
He had just put the trap in his little hidey hole with, I don't know what that puzzle is called.
Smart people stuff.
Smart people stuff. People who have, is the atomic weight of cobalt 58.9? I don't know what the atomic weight
is. You're not a Spengler.
But like, okay, so second thing, and TJ touched on this, and we touched about this in our other video, which includes no spoilers. We talked a lot about the music. Go watch that video, by the way. Like, comment, subscribe, smash the dingy. I thought the original music was so well placed in every aspect of this film. I like how they didn't go into the main Ray Parker theme until the very end. I love the piano stuff. The menacing kind of the buildup that is in this movie, because it fits so well with what they did. Only thing that I would have done different with this, as far as the music goes, when all the ghosts get released and they break back into the jail to get all their stuff, and so like Lucky is in her dad's cop car, the rest of them are in Ecto-1. About 30 seconds prior to them rolling out, I wish they would have totally went with the other Ray Parker song. And then, because that's the first time in the movie you hear the sirens. That wah, wah, and it's just like, oh God, I got goosebumps again. When they rolled out of there, I was like, oh, why? Oh man, that would have been so good if they could have just had that Sedgwick Hotel scene music, Ray Parker playing over that. But anyways, that's neither here nor there. I'm not going to give it an F because of that, although I would have liked to see that. Paul Rudd, their camaraderie on screen is so like, it's Paul being Paul. I don't know. Like, I liked everything about that because he's just being himself in a lot of this. And like, she's a great actor, but like, you feel like some of the stuff I want to see some behind the scenes stuff on this when it finally gets released. I'm wondering how much of that was ad-libbed, how much of their back and forth was ad-libbed, because it was great. It was absolutely great. And it really kind of, so you're already invested in the kids' characters. And this is like, when you go to a movie, you have a main character a lot of the times. You may have some supporting cast. There are 9 main characters in this movie. And you're invested in every one of them. It's kind of, well, it's very much like Stranger Things. Like, everybody's story, you're invested in 100% at the time where they're there. There's not one main person. I do like, one of my favorite things was, it started with chess. Egon being a ghost, doing his ghostly stuff, playing chess. Then it went down to his lab, and he's, like, lighting things on. And that came full circle because, you know, his daughter had such a hatred towards him. And even Ray, on that phone call, they had such a hatred because they didn't understand. They didn't know what was going on. They just thought he left. And then when the moment where I don't know what was more emotional for me. Hang on. Hold back. Let me choke that back. All right. I'm serious. I was ready to go. I was ready to just start bawling. I don't know what was more emotional for me. His reveal at the end. And I think that's totally CG. I don't think they got an actor and dummied him up. I think they took Harold and CG'd him to that, because we've come leaps and bounds technology-wise, and that's why he didn't talk. I love the fact that he didn't say a word. I love that, because let it be just – all you need to do is to see. So, but I don't know what was more heart-strung for me, like the reveal at the end where he's helping his granddaughter, and they all see him, which is still kind of funny because they're like, oh, yeah, he's a ghost now, I guess. Okay, cool. Well, all right then. You know, they just kind of nonchalantly blow it off. But when – she's down in his lab and she sees all those pictures of herself and how much he does care about her and has been keeping up with her. That kind of like, I don't know, it like broke my heart, you know, because like she didn't know. Mm-hmm. And this whole time she's been like, and then her daughter is basically the teenage version of him. To me, that was really powerful. And I think that, of course, she got attacked by the terror dog shortly after that and didn't remember anything until she got out in her Zool dress. But that was fun. Where was I at? Are you a god? We already discussed. Come on, Ray. you got this. Little Puff's always fun. What did I write here? Oh, okay. So I want to hear what you have to say on this, Mr. Cack. So I love the imagery and the Shandor-ness. Evo Shandor around Oklahoma. He's a mining town. He bought everything here. He paid for all of this, blah, 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 blah. I was like, cool. That's really neat how they relate it to the storyline. But then they got down the cave and they're like, oh, he's there. Okay. All right. Well, okay. This took a turn. Okay. How can we go with this? Shit blows up. He's like, oh, I've been waiting for you, my queen. And she just kills him. It's like, do we really need that? Dude, can we not just left it at the storyline and then, you know, Gozer wakes up and just goes on about Gozer's business? I felt like that was poorly utilized, and I didn't like a whole lot, or I didn't not like a whole lot of things about this. That one for me was kind of like when she just kills him, and I knew she was, or I'm sorry, I knew it was going to do it. It's Gozer, whatever it wants to be. But I knew that was going to happen. You just felt it, and it's like, hey, Gozer didn't care about your piddly human stuff. But it was just that point where I was like, I mean, was that part of the plot really kind of necessary? So I wanted to get your thoughts on that, Mr. Cack. Why do we include Evo Shandor? And does he just keep going into like stasis every time one of these things happens since the dawn of time or whenever?
So, I don't think it was necessary, but I am totally on board with them doing something with Evo Shandor. Evo Shandor was supposed to be a character involved in the first one, right. In one of the drafts. It was going to be Paul Rubens playing kind of a devilish character, but I guess a lot of people had a hard time wrapping their mind around Pee-wee Herman being evil. But
in 1984.
Yeah, so I was hoping when I saw the body in the casket, I'm like, please, for all that is good and holy in the world, please be Paul Rubens. Please be Paul Rubens. And then it was J.K. Simmons, so then I was fine with him getting killed off pretty unsanctimoniously. I think it's a weird thing to throw into the movie, of course, but if you look at the larger mythos, you have someone that devoted their entire life and afterlife to bringing about what they thought would be their promised god and giving them the keys to the castle to rule humanity. And he was promptly killed afterwards. It's just like, man, that's just how it is. Gozer isn't here to make friends. Gozer is a destroyer, a conqueror. Gozer doesn't give a crap that you did all this for them. Thanks, but now you're in half. But no, I mean, ultimately, because there wasn't... So I think... For me, I started thinking, dang, what if this town has, like, strategically placed, like, terror dogs or Gozer cults members within it? So maybe that's why we keep seeing certain town members over again, and all of a sudden a big reveal of, oh, gosh, they are, like, a cult of Shandor or whatever. And then that never happened. I was like, well, damn, that was kind of a missed opportunity. It would have been nice if they included more, but because... They did go into, this was a town founded on Evo. Like, sure, let's give Evo his one rub because we never actually see him. And let's just tear him apart because it's...
He was promptly killed.
He was looking for Spider-Man pictures anyways.
Okay, so one other thing I did have on this, we can go back to three screen for this one just because I'm kind of interested in y'all's reactions, which I kind of discussed it with TJ. So one other thing I did like about this is every good film has some sort of comic relief. This film's comic relief was podcast. That little dude was like all over the place. I mean, almost to the point of annoyingly entertaining, but like still just like it was annoying, but it was well placed and it was like everything hit home. I mean, even to the last line. You're my subscriber. Like, it kind of came full circle. Excuse me. It was cheesy, but like he was there sort of, he was kind of like the Bill Murray character, you know, the kind of the mood lighter. Hey, I believe in all this stuff. I'm definitely a part of it, but like, do you want to go on a date? You know, kind of like, just had that kind of game show. Now I remember what I was going to say a second ago. Now, Mr. Kak, you have children's as I do. TJ has a nephew, which is about roughly the same age as my son. So at one time or another, we've all been acquainted with SpongeBob SquarePants. Mm-hmm. When the big reveal came at the end and three Ghostbusters showed back up, my first thought was Mermaid Man and Barnacle Boy in their older years. Like, they're still there. Oh, look at TJ. I gotta laugh. When they just showed
up. I've seen enough SpongeBob to know that reference, and it's hilarious.
So, you see any of the old Mermaid Man and Barnacle Boys, they're like, Mermaid Man, ha ha ha, Muscle Boy, I am here. And then they're up in their olden years, and the first thing I thought of was like, it's Mermaid Man and Barnacle Boy.
Evil!
Oh, boy. Anyways, Kak, I will let you have the floor now because I know there's a lot of things. Well, you kind of did. We kind of threw it back and forth. There was anything else you want to add, what you liked, didn't like, anything you would have done differently?
Yes. There we go. Okay, so things that I liked. Let's start with the characters. Phoebe is the best character to me in this film. McKenna Grace is amazing. The Phoebe character, amazing. I would then say there's some kind of weird triangle with Paul Rudd's Gary Gruberson. Awful name. I hate that name to so many degrees. You have Gary Gruberson. You have Callie the mother. And then Podcast. I really like Podcast. And then after that, with the new cast, I would say Trevor and Lucky then come in. Trevor's story just kind of felt a little flat. He definitely felt like he got the Winston treatment. All right, he wants to drive the car. Like, we get that. He wants to drive the car and get with this girl. And then Lucky, I feel like they could have done more to give her more personality, because she had some moments there where it's like, all right, she's a sassy son of a gun. She's quick on her feet, and the quickness is one thing. When they see her in the prison and Trevor's like, you got arrested too, and she's like, yeah, I need you to take the fall for me.
And he was totally about to do it.
Yeah, so there was moments there. And then the original Ghostbusters. But even with the introduction of the original Ghostbusters, I thought Phoebe's the best thing character-wise in the film, not counting the ghost of Egon. Like you mentioned, Jared, I love that Egon, you know, came back as a ghost and was interacting. And it wasn't like this... So there was a little bit of a build to it, because you see the chess piece move, and then it became very aggressive. It's like, all right, okay, you figure this crap out, young girl. Now follow me down this this pole into the secret hidden base I have, and I'm going to, and you're just going to accept it, because she could be freaking out, but she established earlier in that film, like, the overloading of sensory stuff helps calm her.
Yeah.
And she doesn't know, like, her emotions don't match outwardly as what she's doing inwardly. So she could have been panicking the entire time that this ghost figure that she didn't believe in at the time was kind of leading her around, and she was just going with it, which is so fun to think about in hindsight with all of that. But McKenna Grace's character is amazing. I love that this film... For as much as it was, because it says for Harold at the end, yes. For as much as this was a love letter to Harold Ramis, and I've said this in a different YouTube video, go find it. This was a love letter to Egon Spengler. This movie is so much Egon Spengler that it's unreal. There is character quirks thrown throughout. So it was offhandedly established, but more apparent in certain aspects. I think they address it at some point in a scene that either didn't make it to the final cut or didn't make it through draft revisions. But Egon has a big sweet tooth. That's one of his parts of his characters. It's why during the Twinkie reference, he has a Twinkie. It's why when she pulls out his uniform down there, there's a Crunch Bar in it. It's why after the library situation, when Peter awards Egon for his, laying out that they could capture Ghost and definitely hold him, he offers him candy. Like, that's, Egon has a sweet tooth, and that's something that they don't ever outright say, but everything's there for it. And you see that play out in this, and just, I don't know, man. It just felt like this was Egon Spengler's movie. And that's so awesome and so sad. It's just so heartbreaking to realize, like, he got a tribute movie, and all it took was his death. And, like, that's just... It's heartbreaking with that realization, but at the same time, I think it's amazing that they did this as, you know, kind of a here-you-go Egon-type thing. I also like that they gave Winston a little bit more shine. And Jared, let's go back to the three-way. When you were talking earlier about, like, you know, hey, kudos to me for not saying anything. When TJ, during yesterday's stream recording, was like, I kind of like to believe in Ghostbusters 2. Winston was helping keep the bills in check and everything, and he was the one handling the money behind the scene, making sure everything's like, I was like, mm-hmm, me too.
I picked up on that, actually. I picked up on that and was like, I'm not going to do more.
Yeah, I try not to get, I was like, you know, yeah, I agree. I hope, you know, I really hope that is the thing. And boy, did you not know that I knew. I love that they came back and got him with everything. Out of the original Ghostbusters, while I love the shine for Winston, Dan Aykroyd is still just in top Ray form.
Yeah.
Bill is still great. Don't get me wrong. He just felt a little tired. Yeah. And that could be because he's, like, you know, 70 years old.
That could be probably because he's like, I don't want to do this, but I guess I will.
But, and hey,
that's just Bill.
And he had fun. It looked like he had a lot of fun with that post-credit scene with him and Dana.
Yeah.
Where, without saying anything, they tell us that they're married. And I love that because, you know, we never get a resolution to, like, well, they seem like they were together at the end of the first one, so I can't assume that they are together at the end of the second one. But they are, and that's beautiful. And she's shocking him, so that's basically torture. That's what relationships like are built on.
It's just what, yeah. It's just, yes, going back to Dan. One of the things, and I didn't not like this, but when she calls him and she's, you know, okay, I'm hanging up. Like that whole phone call scene, even though it was still very cool, it felt very like he's all of a sudden willing to listen to this 12-year-old girl. You know,
and he info dumped really quick on things.
Yes, yes.
Well, Peter's off doing that. Why are you giving out people's personal information, Ray?
Well, after Venkman left and he went over here and they did. Who the hell is this again?
Okay, child in a prison. Let me tell you everyone's life story.
I did like the fact that the last part of the phone call was, I'm Egon Spengler's grandkid. And then cop hung up and he was like, just his reaction to like, oh my, you know. Like almost like he knew where they might have been and what was going on, and maybe that's why it took him a little while, because there's no time lapse on this. You don't know how long it is from that ending of that phone call until they show up. It kind of makes it feel like it's a day or two, which is, I feel like, how long it would take to get from Manhattan to wherever they're at in Oklahoma. I can only imagine it's the southwestern butthole being the Grand Canyon is there, which is not in Oklahoma or Texas. It's still further west. That's fine. That's fine.
I just want to say this, though. If you're looking at the original three Ghostbusters traveling, I don't think any plane is going to allow them to board with a proton pack. So you're talking vehicle, car driving. So it had to have been a couple of days, give or take.
Well, now you're forgetting the new introduced Deus Ex Machina of all of this. Winston's loaded. He could have had a private jet or a helicopter. Yeah. They don't have to explain it because Moneybag Zedmore over there, not a doctor. I do love in the mid-credit scene that they tie that together. Or was that the post-credit scene? The mid-credit scene was the Dana, and then the post-credit scene was Winston. I do like how they tied
the post-credit scene. We didn't
see the post-credit scene. We
didn't stick around. I thought that was it.
Okay, yeah. So you saw Dana and Peter, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so the post-credit scene is Annie Potts, which felt like a weird thing. She's talking to Winston, and you see, like, his office, and he's talking about everything. And you didn't miss anything, like, groundbreaking, other than it shows him in the old firehouse welcoming back in the Ecto-1. And he, like, puts his hand on it, and, like, you know, you can tell he's sentimental about it. But he says some stuff, and one of the things he says, because Annie's like, you know, why have you been looking out for all of them after this whole time? So we find out that Winston has been funding Ray's occult shop. And she goes, you know, that, you know, why are you doing that? And he's like, it'll turn a profit eventually. Just give Ray some time. And that he had been keeping track of everyone and that he had been paying upkeep for the firehouse, even though they hadn't been doing anything in the firehouse. But he mentions the reason why he did that, because she, you know, she asked that, and he said, when I was down on my luck looking for a job, looking for a steady paycheck, now I'm starting to get a little bit teary eyed. That's what they gave to me. Like they didn't ask any questions. They just gave that to me. And it's like, gosh, dang it, Winston, you're such a beautiful person. Like,
yeah.
You, Ernie Hudson, are a beautiful person, too, in real life, it seems. The only classically trained theater thespian of the group out there looking beautiful still at the age of 70.
Yeah.
Good for him.
And you also
missed this one last thing. While Winston is in the firehouse getting very sentimental with the Ecto-1, there is a beeping light on the containment grid that is red, that is just flashing. And then it goes black. And then it goes to black. Now, I was kind of upset because I was like, well, what the hell's going on in Oklahoma? You took their Ecto, so like, what are they doing?
Probably took the proton packs, too.
But yeah, you get nothing else from that, but... Yeah, that's so, what you missed. I don't know if it's like, it's not like life changing. It was just nice to hear him like reference the looking for a steady paycheck thing. So, like he even says that, and it's just like, oh shit.
Wasn't at one point when Ray's on the phone with Phoebe that he says something like, yeah, firehouse got repossessed by some insurance agent or something like that.
He said it got turned into like a, a coffee shop or something like that.
Oh, it's there's a Starbucks in it now. That's right. Yeah. Anyways, well, overall, I already told TJ I'm definitely this is on the buy list when it comes out.
I'm thinking about going and watching it again on Tuesday. I took off work because it's my daughter's birthday, and I keep asking her, like, hey, would you like to go watch Ghostbusters with Daddy? So I might go watch that again. I would love to go watch it in theaters again, honestly. I thought it was a fun time.
It's worth a two-time trip.
So I want to throw this out there for you two guys, and I want to know your thoughts. So we get a gatekeeper and a keymaster. We have a return of Zool and Vince Clortho, even though they didn't say poor Vince's name this time around. But we did get the there is no mother, there's only Zool, and I was very happy about that.
Me too.
This isn't a stretch because he literally was Vince Clortho possessed. But Gary Gruberson, I wasn't expecting this, especially from Paul Rudd. I was kind of thinking, all right, Paul Rudd's going to be like the Bill Murray type thing. And a lot of people, like a lot of the Ghostbusters themselves, like Ernie and Dan and Bill during the stuff have kind of said that the torch was passed on to Paul for that type character. I think the torch passed to Paul was Rick Moranis's.
That's right.
Story. I think he is more than I ever imagined Rick Moranis-like in this than I guess I ever considered him being. Like, everything he essentially did, I was like, sweet baby Jesus, this, forget him being Dana Barrett's Oscar. Did Louis Tully have another, like cousin out there in the world somewhere that spawned another Louis? Because Gruberson is a Louis Tully.
No, he very much is, and I think that was one of my only disappointment. Well, I mean, a handful of them, but like I would have liked to have seen Rick in this somehow. But I agree with you. Is like the torch has been passed. He's the new Lewis, and I don't know where we're gonna go from here. But like, if we go anywhere, I can't see myself not liking it. Sort of like so, Lewis. You know, he was their lawyer. Don't worry, they got arrested at night. But he was also there. He did their taxes. So maybe he helped Winston get to where he was. But I feel like in a way, like he's sort of the funny character that kind of gets, you know, not laughed off, but like you kind of laugh him off, but you're glad he's there. Paul's character is kind of the same thing. You're like, but you don't, you're glad he's there, but you don't laugh him off. You laugh him in a way that's kind of like, he's awkward and relatable and, you know, like he says all the right things. I don't know. It's just I thought I could totally see that stretch that if this continues, he is going to be more of a Louis Tully kind of person. The not a mentor, but like the geeky sidekick that knows all the stuff, but is still kind of yeah. You know, so I get that. And I think that's a good idea. I hate to say this also,
but TJ, Gary Gruberson is also a proxy of us.
Very much so. And I was about to actually say something along about that. It's just the way he geeks out about the trap and the proton pack. And you just even the whole like once he opens, like, we need to go, but you're an adult. Right. I'm liable. You know, it's just things like that. I mean, just knowing all about the Ghostbusters and it very much is like that proxy for the fans and the Tully type character.
Yeah,
speaking of Louis Tully, is I just kind of wish I would have seen more Easter eggs kind of referencing him in a way, other than like the helmet that gets put on, you know.
Yeah.
But like there has to have been something like that we didn't see. It was thrown in there, like even if it's just something like a Louis Tully law firm on a paper, you know.
I'm sure there is, because I didn't realize this. So Jason Reitman has come out and said that because a lot of people had questions, because there's not a lot talked about of Ghostbusters 2 related phenomenon in this film. But Jason Reitman has come out and said that he did not intend to retcon Ghostbusters 2, and that Ghostbusters 2 is referenced in the film. People just didn't notice it. So the toaster at the farm is the Ghostbusters 2 toaster.
Oh, we were talking about the toaster and how we wanted to see the toaster.
So it's in it. It's in it. I think there was something else that he mentioned that was part of the film that that I didn't notice either at the time.
Well, Raise a Cult. Raise a Cult was very
He did point to that too. And I thought at first, I was like, well, they might have just like soft retconned that to where Ray was always destined to open up an occult shop if ghost busting didn't work out for him.
Yeah.
Which where does was sound the right. toaster? Like, was it like a toaster in the kitchen or was it in the lab?
So it's either in the kitchen or the lab. I don't know because I didn't notice it either. That's one of those things that I would, when I'm watching again, I'm going to make sure I find. I know they were eating toast at one point, but in my mind, I can't remember. Was that in New York or was that at the, I need to go back and find out now.
It was, I think the son was eating it like whenever she's like trying to cut his hair or something and then like the landlord shows up and
like his bowl of water. I don't know what was he eating, toast and water. They're poor, in case you didn't get
crazy Illinois stuff.
But I don't remember like seeing them eat after that spot. You know, other than the mom and
Gary.
Roberson
Gary
being like at the
yeah.
So I like how he is with the kids too. He's just like, oh hey.
Cujo and Child's Play.
I was gonna say he's a good teacher. Then you reminded me that that's what he put on there. He's a bad summer school teacher, but he's like a good. He's also an enabler. He's not a good teacher, but he's a good friend that happens to be in his 50s with these children under the age of 16. Maybe he's a bad perp. Maybe he's truly a villain. Who knows? So you had mentioned, TJ, more for the Lewis thing. I like that Gary got the Lewis treatment after he was no longer possessed. His clothes, or I guess while he was possessed, his clothes were ripped almost identical to how Lewis Tully looked as Vince Clortho when he goes and meets up with Zool on the rooftop. Like the way his clothes were shredded. There was the flower in his ear too,
yeah.
And his hair was kind of pushed up too, like how Rick Moranis' hair was styled. Like that was awesome. I like that Zool ate the flower. I don't know why. I knew it was gonna happen too, but I still got a giggle out of it. This is one thing that I really liked about this film, and I never knew how much I fully needed it. We finally get the first and only moment I can think of where a terror dog is blasted with a proton pack.
Aye.
For the longest time, I was like, why don't they ever shoot the damn dogs? And I finally got it. And then I found out that the possessed people, even in dog form, take on some of the damage received while in it. So I'm like, well, I'm glad they didn't shoot the dog. but yeah, no, I thought that was cool. I also thought it was interesting how Zool, after getting Gozer out there, wasn't too particular with their possession, because instead of repossessing Callie, they went for Lucky. Which made Lucky very unlucky, but it allowed Trevor to have
say that.
It allowed Trevor to have his Peter with Dana moment, because these were our he is not Peter. Sorry, Finn Wolfhard. I don't know if you were trying to be Peter, but you didn't come off that way with his Dana. So I guess in the love story side, that was the most prominent love story. Can we just talk about how much I love Phoebe in this again? Like, I just
want to harken back to that. Like,
the jokes.
Oh,
the dad jokes.
With,
yes.
Like, no humor.
Gosh.
Like,
what do you call a fish with no eyes?
The shh. Yeah. No. Like, my favorite one was whenever, like she and Gruberson are, like, talking, like, the first time. He says something about triangulating it. And she's like, well, did you try three seismographs? And he's like, yes, I know what how many sides a triangle has. She goes, I'm just making sure you're not obtuse. And then the wink.
That was great.
The almost she's like a dead body that happened to wink kind of wink. It was such a weird wink.
And it was so funny. It's like, it is that so a joke? Good. It's like, I did wink.
She's great. That character is so fantastic, and like the depth that you get to that, and again, sometimes you might forget it because it's you're not what's going on in someone's, you know, mental health is never fully apparent on the outside at times. But the fact that they laid the groundwork, letting you know originally, like, she doesn't, like, you're not going to see her emotions outwardly that are happening internally more often than not. Like, remembering that and seeing and, like, thinking back to some of the moments, like, that character's just fantastic, dude. That's such a great character. Like, she's great in her delivery. I want to see her again in another Ghostbuster film.
Yes, yes. Hear, hear.
And she's the only, like, I mean, I know Trevor finally got to fire a neutrino wand, but, like, Phoebe was the Ghostbuster in this film for the longest time, and I think that's super interesting, too, but...
I like it.
How did you like the references to Evo Shandor, the Cult of Gozer's calendar on the wall? That like reference.
They brought it all back together. Yeah.
If nothing else, it was just to reference the fact that the Tunglista blast of 1909 was something that Ray said in the first one, and we'll never let it go.
So on that note, also when the first time they go down there. Into before the rift cracks open, Phoebe's like, why would they? Oh gosh, what'd she say? He's like, why would they build a metal based alkaline blah, 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 out of some scientific nerd thing? And I was kind of like,
I was just talking about
you should have studied,
like a steel alloy out of a highly conductive material, or
That's it, yeah.
I like the moment Phoebe and Trevor have where he's like. And he's like, yeah, but, like, can you explain it to me? And she's like, could you just read? I'm like, oh, that seems like the prison moment, right? When Ray bemoans that Peter...
You never studied.
You never studied. It's so good. This movie, it's not a great movie. To preface again, it's not a great movie. There's so many good moments, though, if you enjoy Ghostbusters. The biggest thing that I love is I watched it with someone that didn't watch Ghostbusters until they were in college. So he's my age, 34, 35, and didn't watch Ghostbusters, any of the Ghostbuster films, until in his 20s. And the fact that he still liked it, and there was another guy that had never seen the Ghostbuster movies at all. This was his first full Ghostbuster movie, and he's like, I enjoyed it. No, he said, I didn't, you know, like, I didn't feel lost. I felt like they tried to explain as much as they could. They set up everything. And it never, so, like, that was my biggest concern. I'm like, okay, if I love this, that's one thing, but you don't need me. You already have me. What about the people that don't know Ghostbusters? Like, are you winning them over? Because that's the make or break on these things. Like, Marvel doesn't make Marvel movies for just people that know Marvel comic book characters. They make Marvel movies to satisfy the comic book nerds, but also to gain an audience from people that may have never heard of that character before. So I think they did a good job with that, but also it's hard to distinguish that because I got a lot of the references, if not all of them, but clearly there are things I missed. Did you guys notice the maid service door hanger?
Yes.
In the locker room?
Yes, I did.
Just referencing back to when Egon and Ray almost obliterated that poor maid in the Sedgwick Hotel. So I like that. I appreciated that. And I feel like that's the thing. I feel like Egon's lab in every scene that they do down there is something that when you buy the home release, you have to, like, stop and piece by piece break down everything to get the full scope. Because I think they loaded that thing full of outrageous Easter eggs, and I clearly did not get them all because there's a toaster floating around there somewhere that's just waiting for some mood slime that I need to figure out.
Yeah, I was looking for like a jar of slime or anything down there to reference like too. The second one. I mean, I didn't even think of the toaster. But like I think one of the things I said earlier, you know, even going as far back as one of the first scenes when they're getting kicked out of the college. And you see, like, this machine that gets wheeled off. Like, they had that in there.
Yep. Hold on. I'm trying to see, because I was just going to see if there was anything else he mentioned in, like, the this is how it all ties back to Ghostbusters.
So, real quick, while you're doing that, and we can pause and cold, hard edit this thing later, I'm going to go smoke a cigarette. Is that cool with everybody? Or should we, like, how much
should
we got left?
Should we wind it up?
Yeah, let's just wrap it up if that's the case.
Well, I mean, we can still do what you want to do. If it's going to take you a second to find it, I was going to run outside.
Oh,
and YouTube,
no, I'm already on Facebook.
Oh, all right.
Yeah. Let's see.
I mean, I think at this point, we're just still kind of we're going to start gushing over the same stuff we've already talked
about. Okay, so the toaster is in the farmhouse. So it's actually in the house. Let's see. He said there's actually lots of lost Ghostbuster 2 details, but nobody knows Ghostbuster 2's outside of Viggo the Carpathian and the Ghostbusters 2 logo. So that was another thing people pointed to, is that the Ecto didn't have the ghost holding up the two. Whatever. I want to go back and I really want to look at the farmhouse and everything. Like, it's easy to see the symmetrical book stacking. It's easy to see, you know, the equipment from the college. Like there's a lot of easy stuff out there. The helmet, Ray's weird little like latex cap that he also had on at one point. Like, it's easy to find that stuff. It's a bit harder to find the Ghostbuster 2 stuff now that I think about it. Because, yeah, unless it's the portrait, unless it's the big picture of them of like in the Greek attire, it probably is really hard to notice things from that. Hopefully, there's got to be a ticket. There's got to be a ticket or a court order or something down there that
I'm thinking, like, maybe not so much the pro, but the Happy Slime shooter packs.
Maybe.
There may be something down there. Something.
Also, there's a great chance that Jason Reitman is just like, oh shit, we didn't include anything from Ghostbusters 2. The kitchen had a toaster and you all missed it.
There's a good chance there's a He-Man toy floating around somewhere down
there. I hope so. Oh, speaking of He-Man and just Jason Reitman's inclusion too, I don't know if you boys noticed this, and I wouldn't have necessarily noticed it either had I not read an article about it beforehand, but when Gruberson pulls up the laptop, have we talked about this before?
I don't think so.
When he pulls up the laptop to show them the events in 1984, the very first clip is a mother carrying a child and holding the hand of another child coming out of the building, and then it cuts to like the Ghostbuster stuff.
Yeah.
That is an actual scene that wasn't used from Ghostbusters 1984, and that is Ivan Reitman's wife, his daughter, and Jason Reitman.
Oh, wow.
And Jason asked for that archive footage to be pulled as long as it still existed, and he said he was bound and determined to have it included in this film.
That's awesome.
So he got his mother and sister in the Ghostbusters franchise, which would not have happened had it not been for this film, because they were cut out of the final draft of the movie.
Yeah, I like it.
I like it too.
I
forget that his sister actually is an actress that has been in some stuff too.
What's her name?
Catherine, but I don't know if she pronounces it Catherine. It might be a fancy way of pronouncing it.
Katharina.
But she, the role I know her most is from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Okay. All right.
She's the lady with the dead tooth.
Yep. Yep,
that marries Dennis. And she's got some stuff going on right now too. Whatever. But yeah. Any closing thoughts on Ghostbusters Afterlife from you two beautiful men?
Go see it if you haven't seen it. And if you haven't seen it and are here watching this spoiler edition, what the hell is wrong with you? Okay, I get it. Some people may want to go, hey, I don't want to go watch the movie. I don't want to pay $12 for a movie ticket and whatnot. I get that, and they just want to know. But seriously, if you've made it this far after not seeing this and you're still watching, just go watch it. It is well worth your money. It is absolutely worth your money. And I'm, like we've said, all three of us are considering to go and watch it and pay that money again in theaters. Because, again, it's not a perfect movie, but it didn't suck. And that's the main thing. It had all the elements there that were what we wanted. Mainly, you know, might have done some things differently here and there, but we didn't care about that when you're in the moment. And even looking back and thinking about it, it's like, I don't think, honestly, really, you know, I would change some things, but I don't think those things needed to be changed. I think it was a good film for its target audience, what they wanted to get across, and to get those emotional responses. Yeah, and they did. All three of us nearly cried on the stream at certain points. So, 9 out of 10. 9 out of 10.
One last question for you boys to give thoughts on. Slimer not included. Good thing, bad thing, don't care.
We talked about that on the way home. I would have liked to see him in there somewhere. It didn't necessarily have to be something big. It could have been as much as just a reference. I didn't care that he wasn't in there as an actual ghost. But I would have liked to see some reference to, you know, some shocking argumental, you know, what's that word? Archival.
Yeah.
Shocking archival footage from the Sedgwick Hotel, you know, or him driving a bus, which allegedly didn't happen because part two. But I would have liked to have seen it in that. It didn't hurt my feelings that he wasn't, but I would have still kind of liked to see him worked in somehow, even if it was just a newspaper article or something. TJ?
I think if Slimer was more of a part of the first two Ghostbusters movies, I would have been disappointed that he wasn't in this one, but he really wasn't. He's more of a part of the cartoon.
Good point.
So I think that, I mean, it doesn't really bother me, but if they do make another one and take it back to New York, then yes, Slimer would need to be in it.
To touch on what you said real quick before you go, Mr. Cag, I like what you just said because, like, Slimer in the first one, I mean, he's a gluttony kind of, still kind of a bad ghost. It was because of the success of the real Ghostbusters that they gave him more of a friendly part in part two. He wasn't that friendly ghost. I think you're right. When people think Slimer, they think of the real Ghostbusters. So, still would have been nice to see him, you know, see his green little face. But anyways, all right, Cack.
Because he did become like the child-friendly thing, and because it's 30 years removed, so all those children are no longer children, this film did what they probably should have done. They included a new character, in quotation marks, that became the new child friend. I'm not talking about Muncher, because Muncher's kind of an ass. I am talking about the Mini Puffs. That is gold right there. I have it on my shirt. It's gonna be on all the products. We mentioned it when we first saw them included in a teaser trailer that was going to be Sony's equivalent of Baby Yoda. And maybe it won't be that hot because, you know, the Star Wars kids seem to be more vocal and everything. But the Mini Puffs are fun. They're gremlins. They're just tiny marshmallow gremlins, and I love gremlins, so it was a nice reference point there. One of them even does the Terminator thumbs up when he's dying on the grill. Like, there's so many cute little things about the mini puffs.
That whole
man.
Scene is gold.
When they defeat like Gozer at the end, like all like there's three mini puffs that are like lined up there, and then just all of them like evaporate, just kind of like the Stay Puft Marshmallow
yep.
Man did.
Yep, yep. I love that somehow they found a way to get someone covered in marshmallow.
Yes.
And it was Podcast. And Podcast was just sitting there zapping the crap out of those little things. But listen, they're gremlins. And I love gremlins. And I think it's awesome that these were included. Because, like, that whole time frame was like, Ghostbusters is great, but this new thing, Gremlins, is coming out. But Ghostbusters stole Gremlins' thunder. That's why Gremlins didn't do as well as it did. but now Ghostbusters has its gremlins. Mini yep. Puffs. I also like that Gozer, you know, there's only so much you could do with Gozer, but I did like that we had more of Gozer, and I love there was more of the Terror Dogs because those are characters I wanted to see more of, but yeah.
TJ and I both kind of agreed we didn't really like the suit because they tried to do too much with it. I like the original, simple, you
oh,
know,
yeah, giving Gozer like the spikes. Do you know that was Olivia Wilde?
Yeah, I saw that on the IMDb.
Oh, crap!
No.
That's when I saw that about the same time I saw that J.K. Simmons was...
Wow.
That was all right. Evo Shandor, so.
Yep. So there you go. Oh my gosh, I didn't realize this. Okay, so maybe this is why it was included. So Evo Shandor and the cult of Gozer being a thing and Evo Shandor's, even his appearance, because I actually went back and watched the thematic cut of the video game, is a nod to the video game because that's where Cult of Gozer's actually fully fleshed upon and Evo Shandor is actually given a visage to, which is the pointed goatee and the bald head. And this film makes that part of that game officially canon. There you go.
Both versions of the game I had, I never made it past the where they're shooting Stay Puft on the rooftop because both games were broken. So
I want to say Evo even had like the weird pointy goatee in his like skull form. Like, his dead form in the video game. So, while the video game itself isn't completely canon, I like how this was a nod. It was a throwaway moment, and all three of us agree that we didn't have to be included, but now that I know that it was there to tie back to the video game, I'm back on board! You son of a bitch, I'm in! Anything else about Ghostbusters Afterlife? Listen, we'll probably talk about more of this interspersed throughout different podcasts and streams, but I appreciate you guys sitting down talking to me about this. This is definitely something I've wanted to talk to people about for the longest time, which is why we took an hour and 30 minutes of our lives to do it, because I haven't had a chance to talk to anyone about this. Thank you both so much for joining me on this adventure. I really appreciate hearing both of you and your takes on all of this. I love Ghostbusters. We hope that you love Ghostbusters. So whether you're watching this on YouTube or you're listening to this on our audio-only podcast, wherever you find podcasts, please follow, like, support the channel in whatever fashion you can through whatever medium you're currently listening or watching to us on. We greatly appreciate all the support we get. All right.
Smash the dinghy.
Smash dinghies. See y'all later. TJ, any closing thoughts?
Nah.
Perfect. There we go. Good night.